Calhoun, J. Del Rancho, for the balance, Kirsten D. Fidel, for the attorney general, the appellate.
You may proceed.
May it please the court, Mr. Shanzel, good morning, your honors. My name is Jim Granfield. I'm the public defender for the city of Suffolk and counsel for appellant Shamika Cherry. Before I forget, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. I will try not to talk nuclear engineering or accuse your honors of making circular arguments. I will violate 1,000 rules of advocacy and start with my weakest point, which is this being a misdemeanor that's on appeal, we have a page and a half, essentially, statement of facts. And at the risk of oversimplifying, which I often am rightly accused of doing, I think my case probably rises and falls on the notion of the statement of fact, she put her foot in the doorway, and then right after that, although there was no testimony whether or not that crossed the threshold. And I would submit that
it also says no evidence of whether it was a storm door, the front door, or whether the door opened into the residence or into the steps.
And I would submit that is even less relevant. What type of door, whether the door opened in or out, that there's no other possible logical, factual, or legal way of interpreting placed her foot in the doorway. Didn't say at the doorway. It didn't say outside the doorway. It said in the doorway. And again, at the risk of making excuses for, because I own this statement of fact.
Counsel, out of the seven of us, I'm probably the one who would be most likely to accept an argument about the doorway, as you may know from one of our prior cases. We don't even know if the door opened in or out, do we?
No.
We don't know anything.
And whether I knew at one point and didn't put it in, it's totally irrelevant.
So if one of us happened to be a textual, an originalist, and to believe that the threshold is sacrosanct,
right?
We have no proof that the foot crossed the threshold, do we?
I would submit that the factual statement in the doorway, whether that door opens in or out, she didn't place it through the door. She didn't kick the door in, but the door was open. I think that's a reasonable interpretation. The doorway implies the plane, if you will. That.
So you have not convinced me, and if you have not convinced me, I have a funny feeling that you might want to go to your next argument.
Well, part of the dilemma is that there's a reason why state or agreed statements of facts are used. I, for one, find them very rarely to be satisfactory because testimony becomes an issue. But you're stuck with it, and that's what we have. And as Justice Mims was talking about, I mean, if there's a storm door, our own experience is a storm door is ahead of the real door somehow.
I would I'll concede.
All right, as a practical matter, it's impossible that you could have a storm door that opens in. It has to open out. Because of the sequence of events there is to get to the next door. So you've got all of these kinds of things that aren't specific in the statement of facts, but we all have experiences that answer those questions. The real question for me is that where is the threshold? Is it where the storm door is? Is it where the real door is? Tell me that answer to that question.
To answer it, to steal your phrase, using life experience, I would submit that the threshold is the inside door. But I still stand
the
by.
Inside, let's say, just for the sake of statements, let's say it's a wooden door,
right,
and a screen door or a glass door, all right, so that we're talking about the same thing. So you say that the threshold is the wooden door.
Correct.
So is the officer's foot cross the threshold? Tell me how I can determine that from this statement of fact.
And you can't... Counsel, you can't be talking to the officer unless the inner door is open, and the officer's got to open the storm door.
Counsel, let me, with a smile, I rarely try to rephrase the Chief Justice's questions because they're so good. But let me, with a smile, rephrase it. Is the threshold a bright line, a particular line in space that is two-dimensional that you either cross or you don't, or is the threshold a penumbra? And if you just happen to be able to hold the storm door open, you're close enough.
No, I would, to steal a football term, it's like the end zone. If the foot or the ball breaks the plane, it breaks the Fourth Amendment.
And there's no fact that tells us that it breaks the plane.
Other than, again, I would submit, placed her foot in the doorway.
Is there any significance to the fact that the officer is on the porch to the house and the homeowner asked her to get off her porch?
That happens, I would concede that happens after this, the foot goes in. I think it...
But it happens before she's arrested for obstruction.
Right, and it certainly helps the appellant's case in the sense that it shows the appellant is trying to, I would submit, legally assert her Fourth Amendment right to be obnoxious, profane, imprudent, whatever she wants to be in her own home, and absent probable cause, absent reasonable suspicion. So, yes, I think it helps the appellant's case. I wouldn't place a huge amount of weight on that, but to answer your question, yes, I think it does help.
Mr. Granville,
yes, sir.
You've done what you said you would do and started with your weakest point. Why don't you move to the next one?
Sometimes they're one and the same, Your Honor. And it is. I don't mean to...
If you got others.
I don't mean to fire... I'll move on. Again, I'm not sure they're that much stronger. Mr. Chandeville did a marvelous job briefing this case, and I guess I need to rebut something he argued, and that is even the resisting charge, when I throw in the alternative about that there was no flight, 525 might possibly say that saves me, but again, it wasn't preserved certainly wasn't preserved artfully in these agreed statement of facts. I know it does me no good, and it does this court no good to stand here and say, well, you know, these agreed statement of facts, you do them 2 months after the fact, and the prosecutor throws you a concession, and you just hammer it out, and we're all stuck with it. But it's my name, not Mr. Chandeville's name, on this agreed statement of facts. So, again, this case rises and falls, I would submit on... And I don't think that the absence of which door did she break, perhaps we're overthinking that...
You seem to have returned to your first issue now.
I'm sorry?
You seem to have returned to your first issue.
Well, I have. And, okay. And whether there's
the problem two is, doors is that you've break. Identified your first issue as your weakest issue, and it seems to be it may be the only issue.
That's
what I got an argument about what constitutes obstructionist conduct. You want to talk to us about that?
Well, my argument is it was obstructionist in the sense of when the officer is performing her duties. The question is, did she have just cause, i.e., was there a Fourth Amendment violation where she has the affirmative right to say, I ain't talking to you? That a citizen says, my stuff's in this house, absent any other proof or indicia or reasonable suspicion or not even close to probable cause, Shanika Cherry could have said, sorry, officer, the stuff's not here, and retreated back into her house. That would have been the end of it. That certainly would not have been obstructionist conduct. Holding the hand up, and then even more damaging to her case, the wagging of the finger, and I think an inch from the officer. Yes, it's obstructionist, but she's got a right to tell the officer, get off my porch and leave the house.
But if the officer hasn't violated the threshold, and assuming arguendo that a derivative violation, as opposed to the absence of probable cause for an arrest, is actually the test here, which is being assumed, but I'm not sure I think it's that clear, but put it aside for the sake of my question. In the absence of your first factual point, the officer, if there's no evidence the officer actually violated that threshold, she doesn't have a right to obstruct the officer at the front door, does she? Putting your hand within an inch of the officer's face?
She doesn't. To go to the Chief Justice's question, where's the line of obstructionist conduct? Does she have a right to say, no, his stuff isn't in here, I don't feel like talking to the officer? Because that obstructs the small O, the non-legal sense. But I would submit it's not illegal obstruction. Hand to the face, from inside the house or outside the house, I suppose.
Let me ask you this, because this is a question I have. How does a hand in the face of an officer who's not coming into your house obstruct the officer from doing what she's doing? Because what she's doing is talking to you. So how's that obstructing that?
Well, perhaps I'm conceding too much. In the context...
It kind of seems that way to me.
In the context of everything, dropping the F-bombs and then it's followed up by the hand plus the finger wagging. But retreating from my concession, if you're inside the house, no, officer, I don't want to talk to you.
No, it's not, no, I don't want to talk to you. It's taking your hand and getting into the face within an inch of the nose of the officer so she can't see, her vision is obscured, her wrist. We're talking about obstruction under subsection A. We're not talking about assault and battery obstruction or felony obstruction or any of that.
I've spent so much time talking about this threshold. If Shamika Cherry is inside her house, which I think the statement of facts supports, because the language where it talks about the officer pulling her out and arresting her, I think she does have a right to do that. That even if it's the officer who closes to within the inch, then that's on the officer. And Shamika Cherry has a fundamental Fourth Amendment right to
do that. There's no fact to that. She has the burden of proving it's her just cause affirmative defense.
Well, if it's obstructionist conduct.
But the facts that I understand is that she's in her house, she's asked the officer to leave her porch once. The officer says, I'm going to arrest you for grand larceny because of what this man in the driveway says is in your house. And
right.
She says, do what you got to do.
Right.
And then she says, she asked about her children. And I guess she puts her foot in the door, and she holds her hand. I said, my children are fine. Now, if the officer's not moving forward, and she's not moving outward, I guess I don't see how it obstructs what the officer's doing.
Nor do I. Under that scenario, I don't. She's still within her house.
You had wanted to save 3 minutes, and since most of these questions are more appropriately asked of the Commonwealth, why don't you keep it?
Thank you. I'll yield to Mr. Shannon.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Mr. Chief Justice, Chris Chandeville from the Attorney General's Office, representing the Commonwealth in this case. I would argue that, as the Court has already noted, there is nothing in this record which would support this Court to conclude that there was any constitutional violation that occurred.
The dilemma with this is that it may be the scarcity in the record that actually results in the affirmance of this. I speak only for myself. But I have to tell you, this is just a problematic situation. On the one hand, particularly in today's environment, if somebody puts a hand an inch away from an officer's face, they're obstructing, if not anything else, their view. And that has to be obstruction of justice. The question is the officer lawfully where they ought to be? Now, I looked at this case and I said, no, the officer gets a, quote, disturbance call, a dispatch, disturbance call. I don't know whether it was a domestic disturbance call or a disturbance call without that characterization. It doesn't matter. The officer is arriving to a place where there's supposedly a controversy, and that is a dangerous call to respond to for any officer anywhere in the United States. But when this officer gets there, the person who has the complaint is in the front yard, not in the house. And what's the problem? According to the statement of facts, the problem is that I have belongings in the house and I need to get them out. Well, apparently the officer decided to be a judge at that point in time to determine the ownership of that property. What's the officer doing going to the front steps and saying, I'm here to get his belongings out of the house? How do you know they're his belongings? and then further say, and if you don't do it, I'm going to get an arrest warrant for a felony for theft of property, grand larceny. I mean, this whole setup is terrible for so many different reasons. And I'm not sure that the Commonwealth has any much of a burden on this factual record, to be honest. You're likely to have this case affirmed. But I have to tell you, I find it terrible what happened.
And Mr. Chief Justice, I will, in response, make a couple of points, the first being that I understand Your Honor's concerns. The second point, which is an important point, is that I would submit that that particular question is not before this court
and does not
need to be decided.
But here's the problem, is that can an officer escalate the circumstances and then claim it's obstruction of justice when there's no reason for this officer to be there doing this in the first place? That's the dilemma. I don't think we get to it in this case because the record is so bad. But the dilemma is, and you have to confront it, because I wasn't there, all right? I've been a trial judge. I've seen these circumstances over and over and over again. It happens over and over and over again, where there's coercive power of a police officer and it goes beyond the authority that they have, and then a citizen says, no way are you going to pursue this at my residence. This was very poorly handled by the officer. Now, I think you may very well prevail because this record is so bad. And there probably is an obstruction if, in fact, there's something of the pursuit of justice and the officer was lawfully there. But I can't tell on this record almost anything.
Now, help me after the Chief Justice has set the stage. Why isn't the fact that she's on the porch and told to get off relevant? I know the appellant doesn't think it is, but I'm having a hard time with that.
Right.
But why isn't, I mean, we sort of liken the officer's ability to be in general places where anyone is allowed to be to the Girl Scouts selling cookies. So if the Girl Scouts show up at my house with cookies and I tell them to get off my stoop and they insist upon standing there until I buy some.
Happened to you too, huh?
Absolutely. Don't I have the right to say little girls go away? And if they don't, aren't they somehow not able to accuse me of obstructing justice? This officer is on...
Obstructing cookies.
Okay. This officer is on her porch. She says, officer, go away. The officer has, as the Chief Justice said, no right to retrieve belongings to, because she has no idea if there are belongings or to whom they belong if there are. So why doesn't the assertion of get off my porch, even if there's a hand placed up and a finger wagging, why is that obstruction? I've asked you to leave.
That the constitutional question goes to the reasonable expectation of privacy
on my porch, where
on
I have
one's
asked
own,
you to leave.
Own porch. So let's take a different type of visitor than someone selling Girl Scout cookies. Let's take your typical salesman selling vacuum cleaners, for example. The courts have recognized that people expect that salesmen might come to their doors, knock on the door, and have mm-hmm. a conversation from the porch.
Right.
At some point, that individual occupying the home might wish that that salesman wasn't standing there having a conversation with the homeowner, and might even express, I don't want to buy anything, I don't want you to sell me anything, etc. And at some point in the continuum, whether it's a salesman or a police officer, they're not allowed to camp out on that porch forever. At some point, it would become a constitutional violation. But I would submit that just because she's decided she wishes the officer wasn't there, does not mean that she suddenly has an expectation of privacy.
But she's more than wish her away. She's told her to leave.
Correct,
that's
Your Honor.
More than wishing her away.
Correct. And I would submit, though, that still has not, when she's having a, from all appearances of the record, a cordial conversation, attempting to have a cordial conversation.
She's threatening to get her warrant and arresting her for grand larceny. Is that a cordial conversation?
At some point it does develop into that. There's nothing in the record to show that she was yelling or screaming or raising her voice with the occupant of the home. So I would submit that first, it had not developed into a constitutional violation. Secondly, and perhaps more importantly, the question is, what is the proper remedy? And the proper remedy for a constitutional violation, as the courts have recognized, is the exclusionary rule. And in this particular case, if Officer Thomas had discovered any evidence of criminal activity inside the home, ongoing or prior criminal activity, the exclusionary rule, if the court were to find that there were a constitutional violation because of the length of time she was on the porch or if her foot actually had been in the doorway, the exclusionary rule would operate to prevent the admittance of any such evidence. That is not where we are in this particular case because there was no such evidence discovered.
Circle back to the factual point. The statement of facts says there's no testimony that Officer Thomas's foot crossed the threshold of the door. There's no evidence of whether it was a storm door or a front door. There's no evidence whether the door opened onto the residence onto the steps. So if you're a fact finder, and the trial judge was a fact finder here, and the burden of proof is just cause on the defendant under subsection A, you know, the fact that she screams at the cop, get off my blanking porch, is not proof necessarily that you have to believe when there's no evidence that he was on the porch. Am I misreading this?
You may be correct. She claims to have a porch. One would assume that she had a porch if she claimed to have a porch.
How do you put your foot in somebody's door if you're not on their porch?
The testimony was not that she put the foot in the door, the foot in the doorway. So there'd be a question of whether there were steps, whether there was a porch. My takeaway from my read of the record was that there was a porch. Yeah. But that the word doorway is not limited to the line of the threshold of the home. That if the door swings open, the doorway...
Wants to come back to the constitutional question.
Exactly. And it's like this. In my mind, it's more factual than constitutional.
Yeah.
And the question is, you know, when the officer's at this door, what duty was she performing? When you send somebody outside and they said, my stuff is inside, the officer goes to the door and the person at the door who's obviously in the house opens the door and the officer says, I'm here, and I think the way the facts go, the officer explains, I'm here because this man out here says he left his stuff in here. And she says, get off my porch. Right? At that point in time, the officer puts her foot to block the door, not necessarily crossing the threshold, but she uses her foot to block the door so the owner of the house can't close the door.
Mm-hmm.
And then she says, you know what? I can have you arrested for stealing his stuff. And the owner says, do what you got to do. You know, and that point in time, she says, well, what about your kids? You want them to hear you acting like this? And she says, my kids are going to be fine. And then she's standing in her house, and she puts her hand up like this, which the evidence shows is only an inch from the officer's face. And the officer's not moving forward. Nobody claims that the officer was threatened by that or anything. So I guess I have two questions for you. The main question is, what duty was the officer performing at the time that this happened?
So one point of clarification, and then maybe two or three responses to the question. First of all, it wasn't just the hand in the face. There was also testimony that she was poking her finger in the officer's face during this conversation. And we don't know exactly when that began, but perhaps, light most favorable to Commonwealth, throughout the conversation, she's poking her finger in the officer's face.
Right, who's been told to leave. The officer's been told to leave, and she's pointing her finger at her.
Well, there's no testimony in the records of whether she had already been told to leave when the finger wagging occurs, but...
Well, according to the statement of facts, it says that when she got there, the first thing this woman said to her was, get off my porch. To me, that means go away.
Okay, so assuming that is the case and what occurred, my response to the merits of Your Honor's question, first of all, is that it's simply not a question that's before this court. It is an interesting question. But that particular issue goes to whether or not the officer was acting in the performance of her duties at the time.
Right.
That was never challenged below. The only challenge that was preserved on the record is whether or not Ms. Cherry had a duty to cooperate, given that, according to Ms. Cherry, the officer was committing a Fourth Amendment violation. So the question of whether or not...
I don't think anybody is contesting the right of the officer to go to the door. Nobody. The officer has a right. I mean, if the Girl Scouts can go to the door, the officer can go to the door. Just put that behind you. Then answer Justice Goodwin's question.
A question of whether she was still acting in the course of her duties while after she's been told to leave.
Because it almost seems like she was there to claim some property that she thought belonged to some man who was standing out in the driveway.
She's there to investigate a disturbance. That's what the record shows. She was called to investigate a quote-unquote disturbance. She arrives and she has a conversation with an individual who says, my belongings are inside that home.
Right.
And so in having this conversation with Ms. Cherry, she's trying to determine, are this man's belongings inside this home? Is that what caused the disturbance? What kind of a disturbance occurred? Is there going to be more disturbance after I leave? Is someone possibly going to get hurt? She's still trying to make those determinations at the time she's having this conversation, even after being yelled at and cursed at and screamed at and told to get off the porch. And I would submit that Ms. Cherry's behavior in responding to the officer's presence is even more reason for the officer to believe that there had been a disturbance, and that disturbance was likely to intensify once the officer leaves the scene. So she has a duty to call
her
better disturbance.
Her being at the door yelling back or confronting this lady is going to make it better?
I would submit that her leaving the scene, she has reason to believe that her leaving the scene is not going to make it better, and that she may have to be back 10, 15, 20 minutes later after some violence may have occurred between these two individuals if the disturbance escalated.
The officers do an awful lot of great things in the community. I mean, they rescue kittens that are up trees. They help kids do all kinds of things. It had nothing to do with justice. We all know that, and it's wonderful. And nobody contests that the officer had the right to be on the front porch, or that the officer has the right, or at least in a helping capacity, to try to resolve a domestic, what appears to be a domestic conflict, so that it won't escalate. I don't think anybody contests that, and everybody appreciates it. But at some point in time, when the lady says, "Get off of my porch," this is no longer a helping situation. This is a confrontation that gets escalated by the officer. I'm just telling you that to mark the threshold, if you will, of the controversy, because that's where it is. Nobody contests the idea that the officer shouldn't have been on the porch until the homeowner said, "Get off of it."
I understand, Your Honor.
And I guess the nub of the whole thing is the line between lack of cooperation and obstruction, and where is it in this particular instance when somebody's been in their house?
The line between lack of cooperation, if she had merely walked away, then she would merely be not cooperating. There would be no affirmative action.
But she couldn't close the door because the officer's foot's in the door.
Well, we don't know that from the record. She never attempted to close the door.
Statement of facts is the officer put her foot in the door so it could not be closed.
That was her intent. That was her intent.
To prevent Cherry from closing the door.
Correct.
Okay. So she couldn't walk away unless she left her door open.
Or unless she closed the inner door and left the storm door open, which are all facts that are inconclusive based on the record that we have.
We don't even know from the statement of facts which door she had her foot in.
We do not know. So she may have been able to close the door and walk away with the storm door standing open.
How do we know she was even on the front porch? If we don't know what door she put her foot in, and we don't know what threshold she crossed, and we don't know if the threshold was the porch door or the inside door, all we know is the woman's cursing the officer to get off the porch. Can't a rational fact finder, in this case a trial judge, hearing this evidence saying, well, just cause is, under subsection A, is a defense, affirmative defense, the facts are just not enough for me to believe that she was actually on the porch when this altercation occurred. Couldn't a rational fact finder come to that conclusion?
I think yes, Your Honor. I think a rational fact finder could come to that conclusion. We don't know how, if she had a porch, how large that porch might have been. The officer might have been standing on the grass in front of the home, the small porch, and the door opened out widely enough that she could put her foot in the doorway while still being on the ground. Your Honor, I see that my time has expired. I've not made it my argument as to the second assignment of error.
Well, you don't waive it. Your brief is sufficient to preserve it. And frankly, I think we've exhausted just about every subject that we could attack.
Thank you, Your Honor. We ask the court to affirm.
Right. We have 3 minutes. What we have left, Madam Clerk? 2 minutes and 59 seconds.
Can't help myself from trying to use it. I'm guilty of having sparse is being kind, presenting a sparse record to this court. My learned opponent, I would submit, however, is far more guilty of just asking this court to grossly speculate on the facts and the record. Could have been a disturbance, might have gotten more violent. I understand the record's bare.
But Mr. Granfield, there's a fact question. Before we get to any legal analysis, there's a fact question. Where was the officer physically? And then the question becomes, what did the fact finder do? The fact finder convicted the lady. Therefore, the fact finder must have found that whatever good cause proffered argument, he was on my porch, she was on my porch, she was doing this, she was doing that, was insufficient. Now it's really just like a jury trial. We ask ourselves whether a rational fact finder could look at this statement of facts and say, I'm not really sure where the officer was. I'm not convinced. Therefore, the affirmative defense was not proven. What's wrong with that thinking?
Well, respectfully, I would ask the court to sort of read. We're stuck with the statement of facts and read it sequentially. And respectfully, I don't understand how one could rationally interpret that the officer's not on the porch unless, in some sense, you just say, well, that's the statement of facts refers to a porch, but it's pure speculation to see that
the statement of facts says. She says to the officer, get off my porch. But there's no testimony that the officer crossed the plane either in the porch door or the inner door. And she could just be saying that because he's standing on the steps of the officer standing on the steps of the porch.
In the context of Officer Thomas placed her foot in the doorway. And if this statement of fact, I would submit it would carry the exact same weight if whether the next phrase is there or was totally deleted. Although there was no testimony, there's also no testimony that there was a pink bunny out in the yard or whatever. It doesn't add or delete.
I don't want to interrupt you, but your time, and I do have a question about your second assignment of error. You seem to imply, or you say, that even if she, you say in your second paragraph, let's just put it that way, that the there was no fleeing. She didn't flee, and
correct.
Therefore obstruction of justice could not stand. Why isn't the bucking and the pulling away sufficient factually to show obstruction of justice?
If I understood your question, you said there's no... I'm sorry, so you're saying bucking and fleeing couldn't...
No, your second paragraph in your answer to the in support of second assignment of error is that even assuming that she did not have the right to resist arrest, the evidence was insufficient because she did not flee. My question to you is, why isn't the pulling away and bucking that is recited in the record sufficient to support obstruction? Why aren't those facts enough to show obstruction?
Because at that point, she has just cause.
You're saying, assuming she did not, which is your sentence, why isn't that sufficient?
No, I think my argument was that referred to the resisting.
That's what I'm saying, resisting arrest.
Right, resisting requires flight. It's purely a statutory argument.
Okay.
All right, your time has expired. The court will be in recess until 11:15.
There's no statute of limitations, so they can go get a felony.